As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, this is The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times, and welcome back to you. I'm Alfie Reynolds, ready and raring to look back on a weekend of semi-final action. It wasn't to be for Northampton or Harlequins, but they went down swinging as Leinster and Toulouse set up a Champions Cup final. We're going to touch on the Challenge Cup as well. Big win for Gloucester as they've progressed to the final. I've had a chat with Lewis Ludlow to look back on that and ahead of their match at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But joining me this week, first up, live from the Wiltshire studios, is Stuart Barnes. All right, Barnesy?
Very well. Good to see you all.
Yeah, good to see you. Good to have you back on the pod. It's been a little while. Also joining us, last time we heard him would have been back in the Six Nations, Peter O'Reilly, who was at Croke Park this weekend. How are you, Pete?
Yeah, all good. Thanks, Alfie. Big occasion at Croker on Saturday, and plenty to talk about.
And speaking of big occasions, our man who has been out in France is somewhere close to Bordeaux Airport, desperately trying to get on Wi-Fi and make sure that his headphones and his microphone works, is Will Kelleher. Will, I think we've just about got there.
Hello, can you all hear me?
We can hear you.
I can hear you too, which is progress from the last hour of our lives that no one will have heard. But yeah, you say close to Bordeaux Airport. I'm actually sitting at Bordeaux Saint-Jean train station, so you may be able to hear some clanging of trams outside. But I'm in a Starbucks. I'm hotspotting off my phone because usually you'd think that Starbucks would have Wi-Fi, but this one is the one in the world that doesn't. So the lengths we're going to get the ruck to you this week, everyone.
I'm a bit worried he's plugging Starbucks too much already.
Yeah, well, they're obviously giving him free coffees, or must have some sort of deal.
Barnsley, you should see the price of it. I'd love it if it was free, honestly. I think I'm with a colleague, Alex Bywater from the Daily Mail, sitting here, and two coffees and two smoothies were €18. So, yeah, no Wi-Fi, no free drinks either. Shocker.
It's going to be a difficult one for the expenses department, that I'd imagine then. But a great weekend, really, gents. First of all, to Peter and to Will, who were there in person in terms of the occasions. Peter, Croke Park, a lot was made of it in the build-up, the match being moved there, over 82,000 in the house. What was it like purely from the atmosphere and the occasion standpoint?
It was very loud and it was very blue. It sounds like stating the obvious, but when you have 82,000 people, there's a bit more noise than when you have, say, 50,000 people at the Aviva. So, for example, Leinster's first try came from a miscommunication by two Saints players. I think it was George Hendy and Alex Mitchell, underneath the Davin stand, which is, I don't know, four or five tiers. And it was incredibly noisy. And you can understand why people might make mistakes in that situation. But you also have, when somebody makes a mistake on the home side, like Ross Byrne missing a penalty going into the final quarter, 80,000 people expressed their dismay and worry a little bit louder as well. So yeah, it was a fantastic occasion. So much was made about the history beforehand, and fair play to Northampton for acknowledging all that. But when it came down to it, it was a game of football, a game of rugby, and all sorts of human frailties were on show, as well as lots of skill, lots of surprise, and yeah, it was an enjoyable day out.
Yeah, Peter, we'll get on to where Leinster are off the back of that semi-final in a short while, because I'm really interested in it from the psychological point of view of how that game played out. But Will, from your trip to France, all the colours and sights of Toulouse and the great atmosphere that it is there. I saw the Quins players getting booed on their walk in into the stadium. Was it everything that you would expect from a Champions Cup semi-final in the sunshine in the south of France?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really awesome. And I've been to Toulouse a couple of times to do matches, and it's always one of those great cathedrals to come to and watch rugby. The Rouge et Noir, obviously they were playing in the football stadium that's in the Garonne River, so down the way from where they usually play. So slightly bigger ground, but not enormous. But they made it their own. They have this huge banner that they put at the back of one of the stands behind the goals with the phrase, the Red Kingdom. And from the back of the stands, they drape these black and red big banners that go all the way down to the bottom of the stands. And yeah, when Quins came in, they got the sort of pantomime boos, particularly Marcus Smith, weirdly. And even when his name was read out for the teams, he got a really cacophonous boo for some reason. I don't know why, whether it's just sort of that Aussie mentality of target the best player and hope it unsettles him. But awesome occasion. Quins weren't really cowed by it. We'll probably get onto a bit more analysis of the games itself, but it's maybe an issue for future seasons, but maybe they shouldn't have been playing in the home city of Toulouse. Maybe it should have been somewhere else in the south of France. But for neutrals like us in the ground, it was an awesome day, yeah.
And Barnsley, what did you make of it in terms of the two semi-finals, speaking more generally? I must admit, ahead of them, I was probably in the camp of, well, Quins and Northampton have done really well to get to this stage, but are we going to see two quite one-sided games? And whilst we saw quite one-sided halves in the first half, so I was pretty impressed with actually the how both of Quins and Saints made a real fight of it.
Yeah, when you get to a semi-final, there's no such thing as consolation, really. But, you know, Northampton and Harlequins don't have that wealth of European experience like Leinster and Toulouse. And it showed in the early parts of the game. And it's very hard to chase games. But the way Leinster finished, the way Harlequins went through that middle game and fought back, I thought both covered themselves, not in glory, but in pretty decent rags. And I would say this is part of the transition where English rugby has gone from being in quite a bad place, quite a dull place, quite a unimaginative, forward-driven place. Changes are coming. And they're not yet there yet. They're against two of the best club teams, two of the best teams in the world. But they're definitely, it was a statement, not just by Northampton and Harlequins, I think, but by English rugby. They carried the flag for them and they carried it well.
And has that been a surprise, do you think, Barnsley, when we look back from the start of the Champions Cup? Again, there are a lot of people, I think, that thought with the reduced salary cap, with all the issues in the English game, with clubs going bust, they expected the English teams to struggle. And actually, that hasn't been the case as much as we maybe thought.
Money is an issue, but it is also an excuse. It's an excuse for unimaginative coaching, poor selection, for bad recruitment, and there's been a lot of that in England. So it doesn't surprise me, because last year you could see the improvement in the English club game. It's loose. Defensively, at times, the door opens too easily, and you can't do that against Toulouse especially. But like I say, these changes don't happen overnight. I think next year as well will probably be another year where they're not quite good enough. Thereafter, I would imagine the English clubs will be like they were with Leicester, like they were with Saracens. They'll be competitive.
I was going to say on that note, Barnsley and Alfie, that it was interesting because I asked a question of Danny Wilson, the Quins head coach, after the game on a sort of wider point, and I'm hoping to write a piece about it on Monday. So if people are listening to this on Tuesday, then they may have read it already. But about this thing of how English clubs go from kind of these moral wins to actual wins, because it seems like we've gone through these semi-finals and Northampton have ran Leinster close that maybe not loads of people expected. Quins lost by 12 points, which covered the bookie spread, which put them as 19-point underdogs for the game. And at one point were 5 points in it. And if they hadn't have had the yellow, might have gone through. But there's a bit of a moral ashes vibe about it. You know, the whole Bazball thing of, well, we played the nicer rugby and we nearly won. So that kind of works, which is an odd space for English rugby to be in, isn't it? But we know why, because the money's gone down and clubs have gone bust and everything else. But so it's an interesting thing. And Danny Wilson was saying that the way they can probably bridge the gap is by clever coaching, like Barnsley was saying. And that Northampton have clearly done that with intelligent development of young players. Quins are trying to do the same thing. And he was saying that if you look now, people like Chandler Cunningham South and Finn Baxter, who are 20, 21 years old, have started a Champions Cup quarterfinal, started a Champions Cup semi-final, and neither looked out of place, and actually were probably two of the better players in the Quins team. So he's hoping that plus a bit of lingering experience from the likes of Marla Kerr, etc., will help. because they're never going to bridge the gap with money. The budgets in Ireland, particularly Leinster, I mean, they're signing Jordi Barrett and RG Snaiman next season. Like, they're not getting worse, are they? And Toulouse, similar, they're spending more than 10 million euros on their team. And they've got Argentinian internationals like Chocobares on the bench. And Thomas Ramos came on with about 10, 15 minutes to go. And you think that's slightly unfair, really, isn't it? So clever coaching is the answer. There could be a way. I mean, chatting to a few different people this morning, there seems to be a sense that on the flip side to that argument of, oh, three clubs have gone bust, actually the quality is increased in other teams because they've taken some of the players that were left out of jobs. The 10-team thing makes the scheduling slightly easier. However, there are still issues where certain clubs are having to play a Premiership game on a Sunday and then leg it round and play a European game. So there's more that I think English rugby could do to help its own teams compete at this level, because they're never going to do it with checkbook.
I'll get back onto Leinster in just a second, but another one on Northampton and Harlequins. This might be incredibly unfair, but I was just thinking about it of, whilst no one expected them to win these games, given the position that they were able to put themselves in, do you think there'll be any sense of a missed opportunity? Just in terms of, I was thinking about it, and if Toulouse or Leinster had lost this weekend, we would all be sat here on a Monday morning and thinking, well, they are big enough sides with enough resources and quality to get back to this point next season, where that's not quite the same, I think, with Saints and Quins, that you necessarily think they'll definitely be back here again. So is there any part of, do you think, those teams, whilst they were underdogs, that actually this was a missed chance to get themselves through to a final?
I 100% agree with you on that, Alfie, particularly from the Quins' perspective, where they're losing Andre Esterhazy and they're losing Will Collier. They're losing Lewis Liner next season. I know Northampton are losing Courtney Laws, losing Lewis Ludlam. Like, you think that as much as it was a shot to nothing in some respects, that was their shot. And it was interesting, we had a little chat with Danny Kerr afterwards, and like slightly pantomime, but he came into the little room we were in and just looked us all in the eye and hit the desk three times with his fist as if to go, ah, that was the chance. He may not get again as an older player. And you think, a line out here, a line break there, a couple of under-resourced rucks, a little counter-rucking that they got nailed off the ball three times, and you think they had chances. And maybe Northampton were neutered better by Leinster than Quins were by Toulouse, but definitely Quins had chances to win that game, for sure.
Yeah, but Northampton will be a better team next season. They will be more experienced with their players. Harlequins, likewise, will have players coming through. English, like all nations, I guess, they like to moan, but we don't say we've got a huge player base. You know, if you look at international rugby, England's got more money, England's got more players. What's our record like compared to New Zealand? Rugby is, in the end, about working your resources to the best of your ability. And I know that there are advantages for teams like Leinster and Toulouse, but English have natural advantages. You know, Ireland has this wonderful setup in developing their players. On the flip side, there could come a day when Ireland's saying, yeah, but England have got so many more players than us that if they develop them well, that's a bloody big advantage for them. So I still think that the whole English thing is a transition that is going the right way, and I don't think there are excuses. And I do think that Northampton definitely, and Quins in all probability, will come again. Because I think, like I said, I think English rugby is on an upward curve.
I'm more familiar with Saints from this season, from seeing them win in the wet at Thomond Park when they had to find a way to win a game in adversity, having lost a player to the, you know, one red, one yellow. They were able to win in the wet down there, and they looked to me again on Saturday, they looked like a team that is going through that process that you have to go through in Europe, whereby you lose a couple maybe to eventually get there and win something. So they'll take strength from Saturday, and they'll take strength from the journey that they've been on this this campaign. They will miss Courtney Laws; he was phenomenal on Saturday. But I agree with Barnsley in that there should be enough talent out there, and if the resources are well managed and good coaching comes into it, which is evident in the Saints' displays this season, then they can get there eventually.
So what I hope doesn't happen, and I think I'm confident it won't with a couple of clubs, but maybe not all of them. So we know that the salary cap's going up in England next season, 6.4 million, and it'll probably stay there for a couple of years, even though quite a lot of people, including people at the league itself, want it to be lower, try and be a bit more sustainable. what I hope doesn't happen is that some clubs go, brilliant, we can just sign a couple of superstars and chuck them in instead of coaching the players they've got well. I don't think Northampton are going to start doing that. They never really have done. And they still don't spend to the cap, as we keep saying on the pod. And I'm not sure Quinns will either. They don't look to have major marquee replacements for the guys they're leaving, like Esterhazen, coming in. But the fear is that you try and cover the holes by signing a big name, basically, where England could become a place where lots of young English coaches are coaching the players very well, guys like Sam Vesti, for example, that we've lauded quite a lot this season. I hope they don't just go, oh, brilliant, we've got not more money to spend, so let's just chuck some cash at it.
I don't think that's going to be what Leinster will do, for example, in the long term. I know you've mentioned Jordy Barrett and Sneijman for next year. I think that's something to do with the fact that Leinster, because they're redeveloping the RDS, they're going to have to play most of their games in the Aviva, so they need to sell a few more tickets. If you look at their recruitment in previous years, people like Charlie Natai coming in really as a sort of a seasoned pro to help the guys, the youngsters around him, while the stars are away on Six Nations duty. So I don't necessarily think that these two signings are a sign of what's going to come, because Ireland generally have to make sure that there are opportunities for young players coming through to play in the Champions Cup so that then they can move through to the international team.
I reckon it's different with those Leinster signings, aren't they? Because they're kind of the cherry on the cream on the top, aren't they? Because they've built the whole cake, and now they're adding the absolute stardust on the top. And it's sort of a better version of what Exeter did, didn't they? They sustainably built the team and evolved it over 10 years, and then added, right at the end of that cycle, Stuart Hogg, Johnny Gray, seasoned internationals that got them over the line in the Champions Cup, and then obviously lost them all. But Leinster have built this long-term system, have got such a depth of Irish internationals now, adding the sprinkling of stardust on the top is to win them the Champions Cup at last, isn't it? Basically, they're not doing it to cover holes.
No, they're not. But it's important to be aware that the Irish rugby system is based on the national team and working down from there. So David Humphreys, the new performance director, when an overseas player is suggested to him, he will always look at the depth chart in that particular position, and the well-being of the national team is what will come first. I don't see a flood of Jordy Barretts coming our way. I think this is not typical of the way things will necessarily be going.
Paradoxically, if there's one nation that's in danger of doing what Will suggested and buying the big name and making a bit of a mess of it, it's France. Because France is the place with the money. France is the place where the clubs have still, in their own way, most independence from the international team. And, you know, the gap, we'll keep talking about the gap between French and English players. Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but you know, there's a few English players who have gone to France, and you're thinking, yeah, great, have him. He's passed his best. And France have benefited in the last 3 or 4 years from coaching bottom up. That they have got their recruitment systems and academies in a great place. They've got to stay firm with that. But France is the country that got the capacity to just click their fingers and go and buy, you know, England's most famous player, who might be most famous, but not necessarily the most useful.
Peter, just in terms of Leinster then, if it brings us on to them, what's been the reflection of the game from your point of view and from in Ireland? Because for 40, 50 minutes, they're absolutely brilliant. They could have been out of sight by then, but then it ends up being a much closer game, a lot more nervy, I would imagine as well. What was the reason for that? Did we see the traditional stereotype of Leinster's mental fragility in a big game, or just what's the kind of reaction to what we saw?
Well, the primary reaction was one of relief, but I think there's not a lot of optimism out there for the reasons that you mentioned. There are echoes of, you know, the last two finals where Leinster were caught from behind, and you wonder, is there psychological scarring there from that point of view? I think it's important to credit the Saints, because when James Lowe scored his third try just after the break, we assumed that the Saints would run out of juice because they'd had a tougher preparation. I think it was actually Leinster who were a little bit spooked. Maybe it was because they ran into contact a few times and were turned over and decided we're just going to kick the ball away here. Gibson Park started putting the ball up in the air, box kicking. Tried to manage or kind of work their way towards the result they wanted rather than carrying on playing. You were kind of thinking if there was a bonus point at stake here, maybe they'd keep keeping the ball, but they didn't keep keeping the ball, and they invited Saints into the game. So there's some, I suppose there's some history on Leinster's side in that they have a good record against Toulouse. They've beaten them in three semi-finals over the last 5 years, but all of those were in the Aviva Stadium. And if you look at the number of Toulouse players who have experience of winning a European final, it's considerably greater than Leinster's experience. Leinster have only three players. They had only played three players on Saturday who started the 2018 final, which was the last one that they won, whereas Toulouse had about 10 players who won in 2021. So there's a question, even for all of the international caps, the number of international caps that Leinster have, this is still a Leinster team that is just post-Johnny Sexton. And you wonder if they have the characters to steer them out of difficult waters when the pressure really comes on in the last third of a cup final.
You know, watching that game, Pete, I'm not sure that Leinster got it wrong in how they tried to manage the game, because Leinster play a very accurate, fast game, and it requires a huge amount of concentration. And I think, you know, I don't think Leinster can do that for 80 minutes. We haven't seen evidence. We've seen them destroy teams in 20 minutes, 40, 60 is about the most I've ever seen. So I could see what they're doing, but I think the problem was they just weren't accurate enough. And, I think every decision Gibson Park made was good, but not every execution. And that brings teams like Northampton back into it. And when they play Toulouse, if they come out of the blocks fast, as they did against Northampton, if they will not be able to sustain that degree of excellence. But if in the last 20 minutes they kick loose, then they have problems, because Toulouse will come tearing back at them. And Sexton is an issue, because I think also, I don't wish to sound hard, but I think Ross Byrne has grown up in the shadow of Johnny Sexton and tries to be Leinster's next Sexton, and he's nothing like him. And it does place a great burden of pressure on Gibson Park, and we saw that. He's always kicked a lot, and it was interesting. They didn't use Lowe, because Lowe's had a few issues this season, but Gibson Park became the target. He was the main man in the first half. His abilities turned pressure into points and won them the game. But he did look in the last 20, 30 minutes like he could have done with someone else, just talking to him, sharing the burden. It's very hard in a game of that magnitude.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There is a slight leadership deficit there. The joint captains of the club this season are Gary Runrose and James Ryan. Neither of them is there at the moment.
Yeah,
Hugo Keenan isn't there at the moment. He has a hip issue. And there are doubts as to whether those three will make it back for the final. So that puts a lot of pressure on Caelan Dorris at number 8, who's a new captain, and Gibson Park, who strikes you as an instinctive player rather than a sort of a match manager.
Yeah.
So that's an issue for them. And it's I suppose it puts them in the position of underdogs going into the final. That's the one positive that I think a lot of people are taking from it.
When you say, Pete, I mean, Ryan's an outstanding player, and you know, Melody's a good player, but they missed him. Ringrose, we know what he can do in attack, but to lose his ability to strike around that 13 channel is great. And no, Gary Ringrose is a worry. And if you said to me, who's the best all-round player in Leinster, I would say it's Hugo Keenan, and they missed him at the back. Frawley didn't do much wrong, but he can't do the things right. So that is a significant loss of talent from a Leinster point of view if they're not fit for Toulouse.
What's the impact of Nienaber, Peter? The suggestions were he comes in and he makes Leinster a more chiseled, gnarled team that are able to get over the line in these big matches and shores up the defence. Are you seeing that? Is there any of that element that the game plan is in a better place to be able to see out these games?
Yeah, he's had a huge influence. The first time it was really noticeable was down in La Rochelle in the pool stages. Interestingly, he picked Will Connors. Connors, who's a specialist chop tackler, to try and neutralise the Will Skelton effect, and also Antonio. And there's a possibility, I think, that we might see Connors for the final. If Leinster risk a 6-2 in the final, they could start Will Connors to try and have the same effect on Manny Miafu, who seemed to touch the ball a lot of times. So it seemed to me like Leinster, especially in the for the first hour, the first 50 minutes, were deriving all their strength and positive energy from their defence. Their attack, if you take out the third low try, which was a brilliant team try, the other two tries were all about Gibson Park's quick thinking and his kind of symbiotic relationship with James Lowe. Apart from that, Leinster looked really narrow in attack, I thought. You're, as if you were a Leinster fan, you'd be hoping they're holding stuff back. I don't know about that. But it seems like, to answer your question, it seems like Ninaber now is the dominant character in the coaching setup. Whereas if you remember the way that Leinster struck at the start of last year's final, that was all about Andrew Goodman, their attack coach. I think playing Toulouse is a little bit like playing the All Blacks. You kind of figure you're going to have to score 30 points here. You're going to have to score four or five tries. And without Keenan, without Ringrose, I'm not ruling these guys out, incidentally. I'm just saying there's a doubt. Leinster looks a little bit plodding. You know, Osborne and Henshaw in midfield really both have had fine games. But who's going to cut Toulouse open if they clamp down successfully on Gibson Park? That's a potential issue for them, for Leinster.
So I did a piece about Leinster before the semi-final, and kind of on this theme we've talked about on the Ruck, Alfie, of they haven't actually won anything for a while, despite the fact that there's this perception of them being this uber-dominant team. And for it, I spoke to Bernard Jackman, who was really interesting and used the phrase, Ninaber's got in their heads. And that you can't have recruited a better sort of mentality coach, I guess, than him. Like looking at what the Box did at the World Cup, winning all those knockout games by one point. Like, it seems like he has, from an outsider's perspective and from Jackman's perspective as more of an insider, he's steeled them for these knockout games and added layers that they maybe didn't have in previous coaching setups.
I agree. And you can see him in the coach's box if you watch the coaching reaction when there was a big scrum penalty and he was hugging Robin McBride, the scrum coach, and you know, he lives and breathes it, and the players love his energy. And because there's also the first season impact or effect, I should say. So the problem is that Leinster leaked two tries in the last half hour. So that makes you wonder, well, has he got to the stage where his influence is really bedded in yet? His influence is very, very clear from the number of mistakes that Northampton made in the first half, but enormous pressure on the Saints, the Leinster D. But it's going to come under even more pressure now against Toulouse. That Toulouse attack is something else.
I know plenty of us and plenty of the people that listen to our pod would have loved to have seen a Saints or a Quins pull off an almighty upset and get themselves to a final. But looking at it completely impartially, Barnsley, it is the final a lot of people would have wanted to see, isn't it? In that they were the top two seeds from the pool stages. They are two of the teams with real European pedigree, and it is going to be a fascinating matchup when it comes round at the end of the month.
They're the giants, you know. They're the Real Madrid, Bayern Munich of the tournament. And I thought Northampton had a little chance. I didn't think Harlequins had any chance. And Harlequins did really well. But I think taking nationalism out of it, it's the best final. We've even got a neutral venue as well. We've got an Irish and a French team playing in England, so we can have no moaning about that. So it'll be wonderful.
It's amazing, Alfie, that so the stat is they've never played each other in the final. That so Toulouse won 5 Champions/Heineken Cups. Leinster have played won four. This is Toulouse's 8th final, which is incredible, really, having made the first one all the way back in 95. But yeah, they've never met each other in a final, but it's going to be awesome, isn't it? And they'll fill the ground out. I think they sold it out months ago, January, before they even knew who was in the final, just because of the event. And so everyone who's bought a ticket speculatively will, if they're a neutral, just have an amazing day at Tottenham. That'd be awesome.
Well, we're going to have to move on in just a moment. I think it is a really interesting final. I can't wait for it. Will, you said at the start of the podcast, once again, you know, the neutral venue thing, should the semi-final you were at have happened in Toulouse. You've got some information, don't you, on what EPCR possibly want to do in terms of venues for some of these games?
Yeah, so I think it's very much a sort of initial idea at this stage, but so, firstly, they did look at seemingly using Marseille or using Bordeaux for the Quins-Toulouse game, but I think the response came back that Toulouse would very much prefer to play in Toulouse, and they didn't argue with them. So, yeah, that was why it was in the football stadium down the river. But that there is an idea formulating in the corridors of power, let's say, that could the semi-finals in future be played in sort of destination cities? And it seems like there has been some initial interest from Portugal to do it, possibly. Possibly the Estádio da Luz, the Benfica Stadium, which would be amazing. And it's whether you could play them back-to-back on the same day or Saturday, Sunday and make a massive weekend of it. A bit like the final is, really, with the Challenge Cup final at a smaller ground somewhere sometimes or at the same ground in more recent years. The issue with it is that, and I guess no one would really want to say this publicly, but it is a genuine fear that if you get the wrong teams, in inverted commas, in the semis, the ones you weren't expecting that don't have as big a fan base or, frankly, are from South Africa and won't be able to get there within a couple of weeks, it may lead to empty crowds. But if you got the semi-finals that we've just had in Benfica on a weekend like that, I would promise that there'd be a lot of fans that would have made it from all the four teams. So interesting idea. They do it in the top 14. They go down to Nice and other places and play their semi-finals there. So one perhaps for Champions Cups of the future, where they'll play properly neutral semi-finals over a weekend.
Well, interesting one, one that we will keep an eye on. We'll leave the Champions Cup chat there. Up next, we'll talk Challenge Cup. It's not a competition that gets anywhere near as much attention throughout a lot of the season, but we have got to a point where we have the finalists, and Gloucester, as the English club, will be there on the Friday before the Champions Cup on the Saturday at the end of May. So earlier on today, I had a chat with Gloucester's Lewis Ludlow about the season as a whole. What we all know has been pretty disappointing in the Premiership, but they're on for a cup double. He was also part of the teams that lost in the Challenge Cup finals in 2017 and 2018. So as extra motivation for hoisting the trophy aloft when the opportunity comes around. So up next, my chat with Lewis Ludlow. Well, Lewis, thanks so much for your time and joining us on the podcast on Monday morning. What a victory, 40 points to 23 over Benetton into the Challenge Cup final. I mean, it's been a tough old season, hasn't it, for the club? We know that, and we might get onto it in terms of the form in the Premiership. But it must have been a pretty special win at home in that semi-final, something that both the players and the fans have probably felt like they've waited a long time for.
Yeah, definitely. And it was like you say, it was a great day for everyone. And something, particularly after last week, we felt like we owed Kingsholm, and Kingsholm showed up properly on Saturday. It was amazing. The noise towards the last 5-10 minutes of that game was huge. And it definitely, we never ever underestimate how much the crowd helps us. But it was just a bit of a performance and a bit of a win that we needed as a group. We knew that if we did as we were told, basically, do what the coaches tell us, stick to it for a full game, then we know we can get wins like that. It's just the periods of the game where we don't, you have those little blips or longer blips, like you say, that have happened in the Premiership, and we're not where we want to be. But we've got a squad that's good enough and a coaching team that's more than good enough to get wins against top teams like Benetton are, because they really are a top team.
You've been at the club since you were a teenager. Have you given it any sort of thought of what it would mean to you to lift the Challenge Cup at the end of, as we say, has been an up and down season?
Yeah, you try not to think about it too much. I did have a sort of sitting there yesterday thinking about it, how special it would be, because I was travelling reserve for the game in 2015, which the boys won, and then the last two we'd obviously played in with some tough losses, particularly the Cardiff game. But it would mean a huge amount to me, not only because, you know, we've done it this year, we've won the Prem Cup and got a trophy back at Kingsholm, but a European trophy is something that I think Kingsholm and Gloucester as a club have always had such a rich history in Europe, and we've always done so well. And the nights at Kingsholm, all the Friday nights especially, they are special. And I think it's a cup that the Kingsholm crowd and the club would really appreciate us bringing back.
Yeah, 2017 and 2018, I was wondering if those finals were something that were maybe a bit of extra motivation for you, having been part of those defeats. I guess it's something as a player you probably don't focus on and think about too much, do you? But I can imagine when you get through to another final that there may be just in the back of your mind of remembering what it was like to come up just short.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It is tough because I think, you know, me and Mark Atkinson were actually talking about it the other day, that the one up in Edinburgh against Stade Francais, we were beaten. It was a good game, but we were beaten understandably. And, you know, you can kind of get your head around that. It's when, like, the game like Cardiff, where, you know, we thought we were ahead pretty well and we were in a good spot, and you could see sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. And then, you know, fair play to, you know, we've got him coming in next year, but he slots the kick, Gareth Ranscombe at the end, and they win it deservedly. But that one did hurt a little bit more than the other one. And it's nice now. You've got a chance to, I can't imagine there's too many boys left from that team in our team currently that were there. I think maybe Freddie Clark would have been involved or on the bench potentially. But other than that, I think it's all pretty new players. So there's only a few of us with a little demon on our shoulder still.
And many football fans amongst the squad, I'd imagine, playing at Tottenham. I know Sarries have taken a few of their kind of premiership games there, which always look like great occasions, but unbelievable stadium to be able to play in.
I think I think even if you're not a football fan, like that, there's a few huge football fans that were obviously well into it. But I think boys that aren't even football fans have understood that how good this stadium is. It's all anyone seems to talk about. Obviously, a lot of us got into the NFL more recently so with Zam, but there's a few boys that are pretty big NFL fans as well. And obviously, they've had a few games there. And everyone says it's just the best stadium. So to get a chance to run out there and lead a team out there should be great.
And playing the Sharks as well, who, even though making the trip up from South Africa, their semi-final at the Stoop was basically a home game for them, I think, with all the South Africans in London coming out to support them. So it'll probably be a great occasion on the Friday night.
Oh, I hope so, yeah. And it's what, you know, what rugby's about is you get genuine rugby fans going as well, because they go to the Friday game, they go to the Saturday game. Like, I remember the last two previous ones we've had, people are buying the double tickets, so they go out there for a weekend of rugby, wherever the final is, and it's a great occasion and something that rugby can be really proud of, that they have these weekends of the European finals of, you know, the Challenge and the Champions Cup. And it's like I say, it's what rugby's about, what fans appreciate, and I've no doubt Gloucester fans will be travelling in numbers.
And Lewis, I know we started off by mentioning how, you know, the Premiership form has been incredibly frustrating for you as players and disappointing. You've already won the Premiership Cup this year.
Yeah.
If you win the Challenge Cup as well, and so you do a sort of double, does that make this a successful season, or will it still ultimately be frustrating because of the form in the Premiership?
No, I think it'll definitely be a successful season. I think you have to look at success in, you know, different types of ways of what, almost what you're working with. Like, we had a terrible run of 9 games in the Premiership where we had at some points up to 10 of our key players injured. And for anyone to do that, it makes a huge amount of difference. You know, one of your colleagues rightly said about, you know, asking up to Sarries, and can't remember what the words were now, whether it was a disgrace to Gloucester's name or whatever. But I think the fact that people are saying that is rubbish, because you look at someone like Josh Hathaway, who's gone out there and played against Sarries, scored a hat-trick, and then come on the weekend and scores again, plays really well. You have to blood these players somewhere. And we have to get around the fear of people saying, oh, this is a weakened squad. It's not a weakened squad. Like, these boys are in training every day with us. It's not... they're not letting people down. They're not letting Gloucester name down. They're stepping up to play for their first time or for their second time, or getting an opportunity, because squads are getting smaller. So the perceived strong teams aren't going to be that strong for too long, because the game's getting more physical. The game's getting faster. Players get injured more often. So you have to be able to have these young boys come in and step up to the plate straight away. And I think that's something that this season has worked well for us. Boys have come in and done really well. We've found some absolute gems. You know, you look at Freddie Thomas, the way he's going about his business at the moment is just unbelievable for a young kid. And I mentioned Josh already. So without being able to rotate games like the Saracens game, and at that point, we came away with a point away at Sarries. You want to know yourself. There's many teams gone there with their strongest 15 and not got that. So, as you can tell, that wound me up a little bit. But it's one of those things that I think winning 2 cups would be a hugely successful season for us. And the amount of game time we've got into certain players will only be good for next year when we hit the Premiership running.
A few other players as well. I know Keelan Inglefield has coming through it. Scrum halves, Seb Blake as well, I think, impressing. So I absolutely understand where you're coming from that point of view. You're so passionate about the club. We can hear it in your answer there. And I said earlier how you've been there since you were a teenager. Do you think that, so the Premiership Cup win, Challenge Cup final as well, do you think that is a platform that, looking ahead further down the line, the club can use to kind of kick on? Because we mentioned the Premiership, I suppose there have been, over the last few years, the Premiership finish would be something that's disappointing. But are these cup competitions, I know there's something that you've identified as a squad of really focusing on this year. Can that help the club kick on in future years?
Yeah, and it kind of has to. Like, you know, you go back to the reason the Premiership is, you know, the best league is because of how hard it is week in, week out, and because of how consistent teams are, or teams have to be. To, you just look at this year, for example, you win 2 or 3 games in a row, you're climbing 3, 4, 5, 6 places, and, you know, look at Bristol up the table, which has never happened before. The league is only getting more competitive. As I say, squads are getting smaller, and we have to use the success and the game plans and the platforms we've built on in Prem Cup. And because you look at those last two Prem Cup games, Exeter and Leicester, that, you know, the semi and the final, they're effectively Premiership games because their Premiership squad's going at it. At that point, teams flood it full of, you know, their perceived starting players again, and they become Premiership games. So it's not that it's, we can't do it against these sort of squads. It's just being, having the consistency to do it week in, week out, and the discipline to be able to stick to game plans, stick to processes, and ultimately trying to keep, you know, people fit. It's a tough old league, and you have to be able to do that, or have the squad to bring people in to do it.
Route into the Champions Cup as well.
That's it. You know, there's one more spot up for grabs there. So if we can get that, that's a great thing for the club. You know, we've spoken about it just then. European nights, whether they're Challenge or Champions Cup at Kingsham, is special. But, you know, the teams you get to face in the Champions Cup, it does make things all that little bit more special.
And just finally then, Lewis, looking ahead, a couple more rounds of the Prem, and then you'll have that European final at the end of the month. What does the month look like now? I suppose you've got that massive game at the end of it. Does that just kind of concentrate the minds for these last couple of games of the Premiership, in that ultimately that's what you're going to be building towards now?
Yeah, I think a huge thing in sport and rugby in particular is momentum. So you want to be going into that game at Tottenham with some momentum and some confidence, and things having worked well in these next two rounds of the Premiership. It's very rare, like you speak to players, not many players like coming in from the cold and playing without having played weeks before or having rested for too long. So you want your body to feel, you know, game ready, and you want to have done a few of things of the game plan to know that you're confident in it and working towards what will hopefully be a victory against the Sharks at Tottenham.
Well, we wish you all the best, and thanks again for joining us on the pod.
No worries, thank you very much.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, awesome to hear from Lewis Ludlow there. Been such an interesting season for Gloucester, guys, because the Premiership has been really poor. As I spoke to him in the chat there, they have an opportunity to win a double of sorts with the Prem Cup and the Challenge Cup. And he said to me, yes, absolutely. If they were to win the Challenge Cup, this would be a positive season for Gloucester. And Barnsley, you had a piece in the Times today on Monday, essentially saying that they can't count it as a successful season, even if they were to do the double. I'll throw to you in just a moment, but we've also had an email in to the ruck at thetimes.co.uk from Mark Bedis, a Gloucester fan who's emailed in before. So good to hear from you again, Mark, who said, very disheartening to read Stuart Barnes's column today, where he's tried to belittle Gloucester's achievements in the Cups this season. Obviously, all of us Gloucester supporters would love nothing more than to win the league. We've been close so many times before, albeit a while ago. However, given the chance to see them win trophies brings such joy, and a great day out is perhaps all we can hope for, especially when the wheels have fallen off in the league. He goes on to compliment George Skivington and speak about the strength of the Benetton team that they faced in the match at the weekend. So, Mark, thanks again for your email. Stuart Barnes, your response?
Well, we can pretend that Toulouse and Leinster and Munster and Northampton played in the Challenge Cup, but they didn't. We can pretend that the top half of the Premiership, the top half of the URC, the top half of the top 14 were in this tournament. They're not. I mean, I don't wish to belittle Gloucester in the slightest. I just wish to come out with the hard facts. And the hard facts are this year it's been a second-rate tournament. There are so many teams in the Champions Cup that some of the better teams who make the Challenge Cup more exciting aren't there. They're dropping out. Gloucester, our letter there says how well Benetton Treviso played. But they're struggling away from home in their league. They're ninth out of 16th. They're top of the second division and they're playing at King's Home. Gloucester should be beating these teams. And, George Skivington has taken his team to two finals. The first one was a tournament in which none of the top six teams in England made the semi-finals. Why was that? Because they threw all their development players at the tournament, nothing else. So those are facts, and I'm not belittling Gloucester, and good luck to Gloucester, but you can't pretend that winning these tournaments has got any way away for George Skivington to say, well, it hasn't been too bad a season. They're ahead of Newcastle. Last year they were one from bottom. Oh, sorry, last year they were fifth. But they've been in the last three of the last four years, they have been 10th or 11th. And that's a fact. And yeah, it's great for Gloucester. And I hope their fans have a fabulous day at the final. But for the manager of the club and the management of the team, there has to be some better product coming out when it's in the Premiership. That's what they're judged by. Leinster, they target the Champions League. Gloucester, they should be targeting Premiership. Their target, they are failing badly, and nothing that has happened in either the Premiership Cup or the Challenge Cup can hide the fact that Gloucester are doing well in two tournaments because they are very weak tournaments.
Is there some middle ground there, Barnsley, in that, yes, Gloucester themselves will admit that the Premiership season has been disappointing, but the Challenge Cup, it is one of those funny competitions in that no one pays too much attention to it for a lot of the year. But if you end up winning it, it is significant. It does change the complexion of their season, surely.
Well, it does, because broadcasters are broadcasting in it and they want you to think it's a big tournament. And we in the newspaper world are writing about it. So we want to think. And I know I'm being cynical here, but that is the reality of it. The perception of it has got nothing to do with the quality of it.
I would say as well that actually, as a final, I'm quite intrigued by it. I get that the Sharks and Gloucester, neither of them are having good domestic seasons, and maybe that is part of an issue, but you feel like they could be quite evenly matched. And actually, as well, I know the participation of the South African teams in the competition is a whole different can of worms that we don't have to open up here. But the Sharks basically, I think, had a home game at the Stoop for that semi-final because of the amount of South Africans living in London. I think it will be a very well-attended and could be a really interesting game. In fact, I was going through Twickenham on the bus on Saturday because I was actually on my way to Brentford. I was on Premier League duty at the weekend for the most dire 0-0 you'll ever watch. But getting the bus through Twickenham, it was absolutely packed because you had the semi-final at the Stoop and you had the Army-Navy game going on at Twickenham. It was completely rammed. It took about half an hour just to get through. But anyway, my point being, I think the Sharks and Gloucester could well end up being a very interesting final. If anyone wants to get in touch with the podcast, as Mark did, theruck@thetimes.co.uk is the email address. We can finish up there for this week. The final thing is to name a god or goddess of the week. Would anyone like to kick us off? Champions Cup semi-finals will most likely dominate.
I'm coming in hot. So the official man of the match at the Stadium de Toulouse was Francois Crowe. Looked at a copy of L'Équipe this morning and they had the front page of Life in Technicolor, I think was the rough translation of Toulouse's win against Harlequins. And they had a whole piece on Crowe, who looks like a little bit of an axe murderer in the back row, doesn't he? Like, he's savage and maybe laid the foundations. However, I just was in awe of Pieter Malvaca, who was just amazing. Like, the pullback he gave on the line for the first try for Lebel in the left corner, the sidestep for another try for Dupont. He was everywhere, and he was probably man of the match after 50 minutes before he got taken off for Julien Marchand, the really, really bad hooker that they've got on the bench. he was brilliant. And so, God of the Week for Pieter Malvaca. And justification, Alfie, for last year's World 15 from the Ruck that chose him over Dan Sheehan.
We did, you're right. There was a lot of other controversial picks, I think, in our team of the season.
We didn't have Peter on, so there were no Irish at all, which is maybe a slight oversight. But next Christmas, we'll get you on, Peter.
Yeah, you can fight the Irish corner. Peter, God or Goddess of the Week for you?
I'm going to go for Tyrone Green.
No.
Yes, yes.
No.
Yes, Barnsley.
Stolen yours, Barnsley? Or...
I've,
carry on.
We can both go for the same guy if you want, Barnsley. At the start of the second half, I was worried for Quinns that it was going to be an avalanche of points, but he had such a dramatic effect within the space of about 30 seconds. First, a magical offload, and then an absolutely fantastic running line, almost intercepting a pass from his own scrum half to score. What I thought was interesting was that there was something in there for Leinster going to play against Toulouse in the final, and that you've got to keep playing against them. Ultimately, you're not going to overpower them, and you're not going to kick your way to victory. You're going to have to outscore them. And I thought just that those two interventions from Tyrone Green within the space of about 30 seconds lit up that whole second half. It was fantastic.
Just very quickly, Peter, as well. I know we've kind of mentioned it on the podcast, but would you have Toulouse as the favourites for the final over Leinster based upon what we've seen in the semi-final weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think Leinster will come a little bit closer to them if they can pick at full strength. I saw James Ryan at the game in his number ones. He's got the cast off his arm. I can't imagine that he's going to be there. But Hugo Keenan has a hip issue. If he plays one of the remaining or one of the next two URC games, then he's in with a shot. Kerry Ringrose's name was in the listed team in the match programme on Saturday, which made me think he must have been very close. But then I heard afterwards that maybe he's not so close. So definitely, even I think if Leinster are at full strength on neutral territory, I'd still have Toulouse as favourites.
So maybe this shows how good the final could be, because the bookies are never usually that far off. But I've just had a very quick look. And on Monday morning, the weekend after they both qualified, Toulouse are 1 point favourites. One point. So stand by for an epic.
For more possible Leinster heartbreak as well. Sorry, go on, Barnsley.
This is the chance. Back the draw at 18-1. It's going to be close.
Do you get your money if it? Because obviously it goes to extra time and maybe.
No, you have to specify, Will. Now grow up and concentrate on your betting. You bet over 80 minutes, or you say, "I'll take it at full time to win."
I'm speaking to a man of experience. I'm not good with my betting.
man with burned fingers.
Barnsley, where are you going for God of the Week?
Well, my howl of horror was I'm thinking no one's going to pick Tyrone Green and I'm going for him, but I should have known O'Reilly is the shrewdest of the shrewd. That 30 seconds was fantastic. The offload, I gasp, and then I saw him hit the ground, and then suddenly the television angle tightened and I'm thinking, hang on, no, he's on the ground tackled. He picked a running line from the gods to carve them open. He played the entire game with real intent and purpose, and Pete's absolutely right. Leinster are going to win. Hugo Keenan is the sort of man, if he's fit, who sees those lines and picks them. So I think there's a pointer for the final, but the sheer brilliance of that running line for his try that put Quinns within five, that was godlike. Therefore, he is my immortal God of the Week.
He certainly refound his form from a few years ago. I was going to give a mention to Zach Mercer, who once again was brilliant for Gloucester and has been all season. So I'll give him the God of the Week, but three good nominations. Well, that has been the Ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times. Barnsley, good to have you on again. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your sport. You've got a great sporting afternoon. Where is it you're heading off to on Monday?
Well, hopefully I'm going to get to Froome Town in time to see Manor Farm take them on in the second leg of the Southern League final. It's 3-3 and the Bristol boys are rooting for Manor Farm.
Oh, there we go. We'll enjoy it. What an afternoon of sport that will be. And Peter, for you, building up now, end of the URC season, Leinster in the final, what could be a trophy-laden and busy period again?
Yeah, listen, it's been a really long season when it starts with the World Cup, but there's no lack of excitement at this end because we're building towards an Irish team in the Champions Cup final. All four Irish teams are potentially involved in, you know, could get to the URC decider, and then it all finishes off with two tests against the world champions in Pretoria and Durban. So what's not to like?
I was going to mention that. It doesn't stop, does it? It just keeps running through, but it's going to be a great few months or so. And Will, get home safe.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've disturbed everyone. They've got a free ruck listen, actually, all the people in this cafe. So they're absolutely welcome for that. But yes, I've made everyone wait for about 7 hours to get on this. So I'll let everyone get back to their day. But looking forward to getting back to the Prem. That's going to be a hell of a run in that, isn't it?
Final couple of rounds are going to be absolutely fascinating. And we will look back on the first of those on next Monday's edition of The Ruck. Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. And we'll see you next time.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.